Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter, from plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
What were you in Her?
In Her?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know what I was. I don't think I was in that. With Joaquin?
Yeah.
Like maybe they used a piece of the podcast or something weird like that. Like I definitely wasn't in the movie, but sometimes they'll use pieces of audio maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's a mistake. Is that on Wiki or is that on IMDb?
This is on Wiki.
Yeah, sometimes Wiki's off.
I really
what else was I in that I didn't know about?
Flock of Dudes.
Oh, yeah. That was with Chris D'Elia and Eric Andre, I think, right? Wasn't it? Flock
yep.
of Dudes?
Yep.
Yeah, it was an indie dumb movie. Pretty bad, I think.
In Memoriam.
That's premiering on Sunday at Tribeca.
Stardust?
Yes. That was a movie, an indie movie about David Bowie, pre-Ziggy, that got no love from the Bowie estate, so they couldn't use the music. But Johnny Flynn played David Bowie, and I played this A&R guy, a journalist guy, who was driving David Bowie around on his first tour to the U.S. before he was known. It was okay. We shot it in Hamilton, Ontario, which was horrendous.
Okay, you were in the Mighty Ducks?
I got cut out of the Mighty Ducks. That's a funny story. My buddy Steve, who I went to college with, directed and created the Mighty Ducks. And
I just met him.
Steve Brill?
Yeah.
Yeah? Where'd you meet him?
I met him. I think it's Steve Brill. He was... I walked into... Sam Harris invited me backstage after a lecture. And do you hate Sam Harris?
I don't hate him, but I don't register him either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I went back, I got lost.
Yeah.
Because I had the VIP thing.
Yeah.
But I was trying to sit to watch the lecture.
Oh.
And I couldn't, and my mom was in there somewhere, and I walked in.
In the lecture?
Like, and I was like, didn't know what I was doing. I was backstage, and I think it was Steve Brill.
Maybe.
They said he created the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
And he was like, you okay? And I was like, I can't find my mom. And he was like, who's your mom? And I was like, she's a lady. And he goes, is your mom Hillary Clinton? And I was like, no, but kind of. And he was like, I don't know how to help you. And then I found my mom. And then after the show, I was like, I thought you worked back here. And he was like, no, not at all. And then Hillary Clinton was sitting behind me because I thought he was doing a bit.
What were you doing at a Sam Harrison? Because you like Sam?
I love Sam.
Oh, and your mom, you just brought your mom.
My mom is obsessed with Sam.
Is obsessed with Sam Harris.
Yeah, we're both obsessed with Sam. We both are obsessed with the no free will concept and his...
Explain it to me briefly.
No, you don't have any free will. You think you have free will.
Right.
The illusion of existence is that you're walking around thinking you're making choices, but in reality, all of your experience and everything like leading up, your genetics, your experience...
Sure.
Has led you to where you're at, but you have to think you have free will because that's part of.
So all your actions, genetics, and everything before you has brought you to here.
Yeah.
So how does that negate free will? It seems like you're just backloading something.
Because you, okay, so like you're on the train,
yeah,
right? And you think you're driving the train, but really you're just watching out the window because you,
okay,
you,
yeah,
don't,
okay,
really,
I get that. Okay.
Like, for example, think of an animal.
But does that negate choice?
Yeah.
How so? I get you're on the train and it's going, and you're just, yeah, a passenger, and you're watching as things go by. But what if you're like, I'm going to stop here and get off?
Stop.
Okay, well, let's say like, all right, the train's going to keep moving, but I'm going to jump off for a little while and then pick it up at the end.
Well, if life is the train, you can't jump off the train. But you think you think you're making a decision. Like, I think I'm choosing to pick that up. Now I'm choosing to move it to the
sure.
right, right?
Yeah.
But everything leading up till now has led me to the place where I would do this. It's
that's,
not
okay,
really
fine.
A choice.
I get okay.
Right.
But it's
semantics.
What you're saying is semantics.
I mean, people get annoyed that it's semantics. Like, people are like, "Well, okay, you're just calling choice a different thing." But what helps with it is like you're about to go on stage and you're like,
oh,
"Like,
so this is how it helps you."
Yeah, and you're like, you know, like I auditioned at the Cellar, right, when I first got in, and I was like, I've done everything leading up to now. I've done everything that I possibly could to get past. Like, my life has taken me in that. Whatever happens now, it is out of my hands. I don't know what's going to happen. It is out of my hands. My genetics and my biology and my experiences are going to guide me whatever way they do. But I might as well take a little bit of a backseat and see how this thing goes.
Oh, so you're using his idea to give yourself a little break.
Yeah. And
okay.
He thinks that that's what it does.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's probably why he's popular, because he's helping people frame their experience.
Be assholes?
No. But like, if someone gives you a sort of way of seeing something, that changes the way you see things and provides you with either confidence or some space from being the shit out of yourself.
Yeah.
That's the nature of self-help.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There you go. A gift.
I think it's also, I mean, people hate the no free will thing. They want to feel like they're in control. But I think it also feels like him saying that also, you're like, for me, at least, I was like, I have always had this like undertone of believing that. Like, I have always had this thing where I'm like, I don't, like, my OCD manifested that way, where I was like, I don't understand how I am Jordan. So I have to do all these things. I have to tap the things. I have to touch the things. I have to do a certain amount of clicks and clacks in order to make sure that I stay.
That's a control
Jordan.
Thing.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right. So
I get it.
The no free will thing.
It's like, I don't have to tap.
And I just can, like, what I can. I think it rang true for me, where I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm not driving this thing. I'm pretty sure
that's
that if,
good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's good that it helps. I mean, I understand the nature or the notion of powerless. I mean, I get that.
Yeah.
That there's very few things, you know, that's sort of the foundation of recovery or understanding lack of manageability. But I also think it's a fine way to frame it. It's not for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need that one. You know, I'm okay.
You don't need it, but you're doing it.
Yeah, if you believe.
No, it's just how it is.
No.
Yeah, you have no power, you have no control over what's going to happen.
Because you're a believer. You
no,
believe.
No, it's like believing in gravity. It's like the thing is
no,
there.
It's not. It's believing in a way of seeing life, you know, framing it so somehow or another it makes sense to you. But that idea, it's just a philosophical
it's
idea.
It's not religious, though.
No, and it's not religious. It's a context. You know, it's
yeah,
like,
you know,
it's a template by which you're like, well, that fits me, and it's helpful.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah,
but you can also think like, well, I'm falling through life. I have no free will, and this is just some sort of horizontal shit show. This train is fucking careening out of control.
That is what it is.
Not really, because at some point, if you're that person, like, if your life is shit and you're tumbling through life and everything's a fucking disaster and nothing is working out, how is that philosophy fucking helpful? Because you're predestined. What's the difference between that philosophy and destiny or fate or any of that shit? If you can just say, well, there's no way this wasn't going to be the way it was.
I think that what you're thinking is that by falling through, by blindly barreling through, being like, none of this is up to me, that would lead to a recklessness.
It does.
But I don't think it does. Because
it can, for a little while. Come on, look at your life.
I'm okay.
Yeah, but no recklessness, no disasters.
Well, once I adopted the no free will thing, it got less reckless.
Like practically speaking?
Yeah, yeah.
Like because you're able to, what, take more control over the things you had control over?
I think because I was like, if I am going to be witnessing this life and I have no control over it, I would like to at least in my illusion of choosing, choose to do the dishes.
Okay, so the illusion of choosing.
Yeah.
You choose to do the dishes because of this new way you're looking at things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the illusion of choosing is still kind of choosing.
But then I was still able.
Because you're choosing against recklessness because of this new point of view you have.
Yes, but I don't think that it was up to me to learn about free will and thus choose the dishes. I think that was all.
So this is like a game you're playing with yourself. It sounds fun.
Yeah. But I also believe it.
I know.
It helps if you think about the guy, you know, it's like my sister was brutally raped when I was 10. She was raped. She was 15. And it, for years, my whole family just was like.
This is you?
No, I wasn't raped. My sister was. But yeah,
oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we were just like, this guy is, you know, just scum of the earth, worst human being. And then the no free will thing, you kind of learned that, like, if you had lived every day in the life of that rapist, you also would have raped my sister. Like, if every day, if you had the same parents, the same beatings, the same upbringing, you would have gotten to the point where
same proximity to where she was.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Your life would have played out.
This is all, it's like conspiracy theories.
It's not conspiracy theories.
No, no, no. I'm saying that the thinking of you know, backloading connectivity to, you know, a point of view, looking back at something. Yeah, like, obviously, everything happened because it happened, you know, the way it happened.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, but explaining it, somehow rationalizing it almost, that it was inevitable because of the balls that were put in motion, you know, as we came out of the primordial soup and evolved into apes.
Yeah.
And then became people. Okay, fine. I mean, if it helps you, it's fine.
But I think it helps you because I think the thing that it helps with is retrospective, like looking back on your life and being like, I should have done these things differently.
Right. I don't have a lot of that, but without believing what you're believing, I don't have a tremendous amount of regret because I don't know that at that time it could have happened any differently. And I think that shoulda, woulda, coulda is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't help anything.
Yeah.
So I have an acceptance over my past and, you know, I've come to grips with most of my, you know, behavior in the past, but I don't need to frame it as like it was an inevitability because that was the genetic train I was on.
Lucy is my go-to pouch. I've tried them all, completely switched from the three-letter brand. They are the best pouches in the market. Hands down, the best pouch experience I've ever had. Top-notch lip pillows. I hate the words lip pillows. Hell of a pouch. My favorite is mango. I have them. I like them. They taste like candy. It's delicious. Great flavor. Long-lasting. Absolutely love the flavor and the strength options. You can get them in mint, apple, ice, mango, espresso, berry citrus, apple cider. And if you're not sure, get the six-pack so you can try them all. They have a little breaker ball in each. It's pretty cool. You bite it, and then it bursts into your mouth, which is cool because I really like to. I'm really addicted to flavor, and I spit gum all out, and I always chew like three pieces at a time, and I spit it out again, take more, and I get a stomachache and big loud farts. But not with Lucy. You break it, and it's nice. Love how long the flavor lasts compared to other smooth delivery and consistent. I get hours of flavor in one pouch. They don't dry out, and they become a staple in my day-to-day. Lucy Nicotine is the best for long-lasting pouches I have tried. Top-tier premier nicotine pouch. Not even close. Lucy is hands down my favorite pouch of all time. The best pouch in the experience I've ever had. Favorite pouch of all time. I recommend them to everyone. Give them a try. Get 20% off your order when you buy online at lucy.co/RIP with promo code RIP. That's lucy.co/RIP with promo code RIP. And if you don't want to wait, check out their store locator where you can find a Lucy near you. It doesn't have to be genetic. It's also your experiences. Like, you, it sounds like you have adopted it. Because you're like, at that point, I didn't know that I was, I didn't know this about myself, and so I couldn't have gotten to
a
place.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So it's just that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little different.
It's like last night when we were at the show and you had fucked up the song.
Yeah.
Would you have spent an hour being like, you fucking idiot, retard, you piece of shit?
Yeah, I did. I spent like about an hour.
Really?
Yeah, on and off. Not steady.
That's good.
And 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there.
Yeah, but I think if you have the no free will thing, you're like, that's what would have happened no matter what.
Yeah, but that, you know, but that's sort of like you'd be standing over, you know, a pile of bodies. Like, no, you know, you
but
make
you're not
going
to stand over a pile of bodies, because as soon as you take the gun and you put it to somebody's head, if you have the same, if you're not that person, your body's not going to let
okay,
you do
I understand
that.
It. I understand it.
Okay.
And it seems like it's pretty well integrated into how you're seeing the world.
Yeah.
And if you see that I'm doing something similar, fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's nothing that you look back on that you're like, God, I wish I had done that differently, that sticks in your craw?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's definitely things, but I don't know that I could have, which goes back to what you're saying, that the only way that as I got older with opportunities or whatever bad decisions I made or emotionally difficult times, like when I put myself back there, you can't get out of them. You know, like there for years, like even like that SNL audition, like there was no way I was ready to do that show.
What happened with the SNL audition?
I've told that story a lot of times, where it was just sort of like Lauren had me in and I did all these auditions, and the idea was that they were thinking about me for Update or something. But when I went in there and it didn't go my way, and I cleared this up with Lauren years later on an interview, for whatever reason he had, but there was no way I was ready to do that job.
Yeah.
And like, I even know now there are things that, like, in my brain, like, I think I should do, or I want to do, or that I'm ready to do, but I'm not.
Yeah.
And just accepting that is freeing.
Yeah.
But there's some, I still resent people that do things. Like, yeah. Why the fuck did that guy get to do that? And if I really think about it, it's like, you don't even want to do that.
Do you have that in comedy now when you're watching All of Us Kids with the crowd work shit and all that?
Look, I mean, I know how to do crowd work. I'm just happy it never was something I had to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, I always felt like it's something you should know how to do before social media, you know, just for self-protection or just for managing a situation. That was sort of what, for me, crowd work was. Like, if you've got a problem, yeah, you can dismantle the problem, be funny about it, or just tell people to fuck off,
yeah,
and get out or whatever. So it was always a necessary tool. But no, I mean, I've talked about crowd work before, and the more I understand about the idea of doing it to get people to come see you do your real material makes sense to me.
Yeah.
The idea of doing a show of crowd work, which I've seen before, there were always crowd work comics, yeah, around, you know, coming up. There was always a few. It's just not something I think is that interesting.
I think it's interesting, like, the way Todd Barry did it, where it was like he was a comic doing the shit and then he did a crowd work special, right?
Well, he always did this thing where Todd, like, I've known forever, we started together. He always had jokes, but then he started doing, it was the, how did it start? The road dates.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it sort of, it kind of snowballed from there.
What was
where
it?
He'd be like, where are you from? And they'd like, Albany. I'm playing the Albany Civic War Memorial Stadium, three nights,
yeah,
in February, 1,000-seat room. You want to go? Yeah. Can't. Sold out. Like,
that's
he would
awesome.
Just, right. So it was this riff he did.
Yeah.
And he would do it with any city. He'd just make up venues.
Oh, it was totally fabricated.
Totally
that's
fabricated.
Awesome. Yeah.
And then he'd go, sorry, sold out.
Yeah.
You know? And then it kind of spiraled from there. So I think his approach to it was not just just like, what do you do, where are you from? And I think your approach to it is a little more, you know, self-reflecting and involves you more than it does them, which I think is funny.
Yeah.
And I think improvising along those ways, if you can bring it back to yourself and then sort of explore yourself through whatever they're doing in that moment, that makes it kind of interesting.
I'm not good at stand-up if I can't. Like, even last night when I did your show, if I wasn't able to look at the sheet music that was in front of me and riff on the fact that you guys had the sheet music, you know what I mean? Like, that's how I... Get in the present, and then sometimes I'll be doing a joke, and it'll take me out of it, and I won't be... Yeah, I will be dissociating.
I understand that. Like, I need to be in the present. Like, yeah. I need to get up there and do something immediate, whether it's something I thought of 5 minutes before,
yeah,
or something about the situation we're in. I definitely do that.
Yeah.
But that's not crowd work.
Yeah, I definitely, I think, yeah, the way I do crowd work is that I'm like, does anybody experience this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then if somebody is emphatically like, hell yeah, yeah, I'm like, oh yeah, okay.
What happened to you?
Because then it's a shared, but
sure,
the idea of being like, pause, what's your guys' deal?
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know that I... it's... like a lot of times I used to experience this just because of the way I did stand up, is that people in the front would sometimes like somehow the room went away and they thought I was in conversation with them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they would start talking to me.
Yeah.
Like it was a conversation.
Yeah.
And then it would get kind of interesting. And I would do some crowd work with that. And occasionally, I'm just not that interested in doing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like I've, but I can do it. And I like people receiving what I'm doing and laughing. But to take time to sort of explore people in the audience, I don't feel like it.
Yeah, it's not interesting to you. Yeah, I mean, if I'm building an hour and I'm like, does anybody experience this thing that I'm trying to write a joke
about? Helps
you
do the joke. Huh? Helps you build a joke.
Right.
Yeah.
But if I'm running my hour that I'm about to record, yeah. I have no interest in talking to you people. Like, I have a whole
right.
thing that I want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But if I'm building it and I'm like, does anybody else?
So that's just a way of setting up a joke.
Right. Right, right, right.
But you still do the crowd work that I see. And that is what? Just to fill time?
Interesting. That is because I'm trying to get into a bit. So it's like I'm about to get into a bit about my experience. But first, we're going to talk about your experience.
Oh, so you just put those quips up?
Yeah, right.
As opposed to your bit?
I don't put my bit up.
So usually the crowd work stuff you're doing is pre-bit.
Pre-bit, yeah.
Well, I understand that. That's something that you have to do now to promote yourself. So you're not giving away any material.
Yeah, I'm cutting off the dead ends and giving it to the internet.
Right.
Yeah.
But then when you do a show, you're doing the part they didn't see.
Right, 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 right.
All right.
Well, and when I record it, it's zero of that. But yeah.
I understand. It's just the nature of the game now. I get it.
It's always been, I didn't always do crowd work, but when the pandemic happened and we were in the park and there'd be a dog running through and then there'd be a guy in a unicycle, I would start talking about these things.
Yeah.
And I would use it as a way to get people's attention so that I could tell my joke.
Yeah.
So now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I do that, but like it's different. You know what I mean? That's just sort of dealing with the moment. Like dealing with the moment without necessarily provoking it as a plan is exciting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. I didn't like that. During the pandemic, I did no comedy. Zero.
Yeah.
I was so relieved.
Really?
Yeah. It was weird.
How long?
However long the pandemic was, until we could go do real clubs, wasn't going to do an online show.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do outside. And you know, people were doing it, but it was so relaxing. There was part of the pandemic when I wasn't working where I'm like, maybe I'm all better. Maybe I don't need to do stand-up anymore. But I think what happened was I just knew that no one else was really doing it either.
It was
relaxing.
Like, yeah, I lost my mind. Until like
nobody's
do it again.
No one's doing it. Good. I'm out.
I know.
And then right when
there
people started, right when the club started opening, I'm like, oh, I gotta go now.
I know. And nobody was, it was like all of a sudden everybody was like, nobody can work out.
You'd be
like, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah. What? It's relaxing. Exactly. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. I didn't have as big a problem with the pandemic other than, you know, my girlfriend dying, but I didn't have as big a problem with the time.
Your girlfriend died? I didn't know this.
Yeah.
What? During the pandemic of COVID?
No. No, something else. She passed away in May. Of 2020.
The beginning.
Just out of nowhere, yeah. Of a rare blood cancer that she didn't know she had. It was devastating.
Holy shit.
It was terrible.
Damn. How long were you guys together?
Publicly, I think, you know, for about a year or so. And then, you know, but we'd known each other for years. She directed two of my specials and she, you know, I was in a movie that she made. She was a film director, Lynn Shelton. And, you know, we had just really started kind of being together, and then COVID hit, and then she got sick, and you know, we didn't, you know, it was terrible, it was brutal.
And it was fast,
yeah, it was really fast and unexpected and devastating.
Holy
it was
shit.
Brutal, like, yeah, she got sick, and we didn't know what it was, it wasn't COVID, and it's hard to see a doctor, you know, because it was COVID. And she noted COVID twice. She had this fever that wouldn't go away. And it was very, you know, it was getting kind of scary. And then, you know, we made an appointment to go to the doctor the next day. And like that night she collapsed in the night. And then I called the ambulance. And then she didn't live but a couple of days. They couldn't get her blood to work.
Holy shit, it was that fast.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Was there things leading up to it for months that were like...
When I think about it, there were.
Yeah.
You know, but there was no way to identify it. It was a type of leukemia. Acute myeloid leukemia. And it's fairly undetectable. And she wasn't, you know, really a big Western medicine person. But she was having these odd symptoms, you know, leading up to it here and there.
Did she have the bruising?
No, it was different. It's a different type of... It's not like it's the prognosis for this type of leukemia is not good. Like it happens quickly. And like I said, it's not like the same as the regular kind, because like once it kicks in, it's kind of done. But it was really a fucked up time.
That's like recent. That's so intense.
Yeah, there's like that Steve Fine Arts did a documentary about me, you know, trying, you know, starting to do comedy after that, after the pandemic and after Lynn passed away. It was devastating and it was hard, but you know, the comedy community was, you know, very nice. Like, cause you know, we couldn't hang out. Yeah. Like there was no, like my brother came out immediately, and spent time with me out there. And, but you know, the comics were, you know, they were all very, you know, sending me shit, food.
That's
people
awesome.
Were calling me. Yeah. Like, it's touching. Like, I don't need to start bawling about it again. But, you know, like, they just people came out of the woodwork in our community to that people I wouldn't have assumed, you know, just because they felt, you know, bad and they were trying to, you know, be nice. And
yeah, you get it in your head that we're really, like, engrossed in a giant narcissistic...
We are, but we're still a community.
Yeah, it's kind of cool when they show. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like people were calling. Like, I'd get a call on my phone, and I wouldn't. There would be no number, and be like, "Hello," and he's like, "Hey, Mark, it's just Jay Leno. What happened?" You
know? Yeah,
I'm like, "Hey, man, thanks, buddy." And I'm crying to everybody, you know.
Man, that is so. I had no idea. Yeah, my friend got leukemia when we were in college, and she survived it. But it was so. It was just like.
I think you can live with treatment for some of it for a while. But this just came out of fucking nowhere. And then there was like, you know, I didn't know. It was, I've told this story, you know, and I've lived it many times. But I didn't really know her family because we were a pretty new couple.
Yeah.
And she had just, you know, her and her husband had just split up and the divorce was sort of in its final stages. And she had moved to L.A. and she'd gotten a house that she was renting. And like right then the COVID hits. So she's like hanging out with me and we're kind of like locked down. And then she gets sick and passes away. And like, I didn't know her people. Like for some reason, before the ambulance took her away, I was like, give me your phone. She goes, no, I'm taking my phone. And I'm like, well, give me the code like to get in case something happens.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay. And then she's in the hospital and she loses consciousness and they don't get her back, you know, and they're trying to get her blood to work for whatever that means. And I called the hospital, the ICU nurse. I'm like, look, I need you to get into her phone because I don't know her people.
Yeah.
So I'm like, just get in there. I'll give her the code and give me some Shelton's. You know, her family name.
Yeah.
So I can make some calls that this is happening, that she's in the hospital. And that's how I like met like her, you know, really locked in. I was calling these people frantically because I was there in LA, she probably put me down as a contact, but yeah. I'm like, you know, her people need to be in the loop here. And I didn't know who they were. So it was COVID and it was fucking horrendous.
Man.
And the whole thing was so terrible.
And you had to call her family and let them know, and then
that she's in the hospital. Like I wanted to get her, at least her parents, who were both with different people, like they're both remarried.
Yeah.
But I wanted them in the loop, you know, with the doctors, with me. And so they could have some input. And then it all happened very quickly. You know, and I tell the story like on the last special, then From Bleak to Dark, about the story was about, you know, when is it funny, you know?
Yeah.
what happened was, the first joke I came up with that, you know, that was kind of good, but I didn't think I could do it. But what happened was, you know, she passed away, and they'd moved her from one hospital to another hospital. And the doctor that I was in touch with before she passes, he's like, look, you know, if you want to see her to say goodbye, you know, I can make that happen. And it's COVID, so like no one's going anywhere. No one's going in hospitals. Couldn't visit people in the hospital. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you can come down, you can get in the hospital. She'll probably be gone, but if you want to come down, I can make that happen.
Jesus Christ.
And I'm like, I don't know. Oh, I guess so. Okay. You know, I didn't really know what to do. And I called my friend Michaela, who was her friend too. I'm like, the guy said I could go see her. And I'm like, I don't know if I can handle it. And she's like, you have to. You have to go. And I'm like, do I?
Why?
Yeah. And she goes, I think you do. And you're in shock. Like, you know, it's full. You're in shock.
Yeah.
The whole thing is fucking crazy and horrible. And you're crying. And, you know, it's like horrendous. Can't stop grief. And I'm like, all right, I'll go. So I tell the guy, I go. So I drive down there to the hospital. And, you know, the whole joke, the bit that I talk about, like going to the ICU. And I felt like the ICU nurses were a little more chipper than they should be.
Yeah.
Because it's their job. It's just their job.
Yeah.
And I walk in, I'm like, hi. And they're like, hi.
Yeah.
I'm like, take it down a little bit.
Yeah.
And they're like, she's in there. You can go in there and spend as much time as you want. And, you know, she's, you know, dead. And it was like heavy because they couldn't really clean it up. She's still in the hospital. They got to wait for the coroner to sign off. So whatever they were trying to do
is still there
to get her alive. Yeah. And I didn't go into detail with that stuff. But like the joke I came up with afterwards was like, well, this really happened. I spent some time with her. You know, I said goodbye. You know, I cried. I gave her a kiss on the forehead. And then, you know, I'm walking out. And as I'm walking out, I'm like, selfie? No, right?
Oh, my God.
That was the joke I thought.
Yeah,
of.
Totally. Totally.
And like, I didn't know if I could ever tell the joke, but
that's
so
funny.
Yeah, I framed it that way.
Because you're like, it is our last moment together.
People do it.
Yeah, oh,
this
yeah.
This is the weird thing, is that like it's a joke and it landed. Like I had to structure it, you know, so like I wanted to distance myself because I didn't think that in the moment.
Right, 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 right.
It was what I thought after.
Yeah.
And I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
But after I did the joke on the special, you know, people were like, no, we did it.
Oh,
we
yeah.
definitely did it.
You see them online. People post them.
Yeah. And it's not unusual. You know, when at the beginning of photography in the 1800s, it was really popular. And it was they were actually the best subjects for that type of photography because when at the beginning of photography, the exposure had to take so long.
They had to be still.
Yeah. So there was a big business in taking pictures of dead people. Like if you wanted to remember your loved ones, it was one of the early pitches of the first commercial photography. I guess it was probably the 1830s. So I have a whole book called Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a book of memorial photographs from that period.
Are they dolled up and stuff?
A little, yeah. They're sitting sometimes.
Eyes open?
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes.
How bizarre.
A lot of it's pretty sad. Like some of the infants are sad. But yeah, some of the people were sitting up, some people not so much, but they staged them.
Right. And for some of those people, it's the only photo of their life.
Totally.
Of their previous life.
But it makes sense. Like, you know, the photographers are like, these are the best subjects. We get real clarity.
Yeah.
You really see everything.
God, that's crazy.
It's crazy.
Summer always makes me rethink what I'm reaching for every day. Lighter fabrics, better materials, pieces that feel just like the moment you put them on and look effortless. That's why I keep going back to Quince. They focus on high quality essentials. Think breathable linen, organic soft cotton, washable silk, but without the luxury markup. It's that rare balance where everything feels elevated but still easy. Quince has beautiful everyday pieces like 100% European linen dresses, tops with styles starting at $32. Their denim is soft and easy to wear. And their organic cotton sweaters are perfect for layering on cool summer nights. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethically factored factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials, home, kitchen, bedding, and beyond, making it easy to bring more premium fabrics to everyday life. I have Quince, all sorts of shit. I use their kitchen stuff. I got blackout curtains from them that are very pretty. And I have tank tops from them. And I got some underwear from them and some sports bras. And I really like it. And they have plain shirts. And they have really nice long sleeves. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/RIP for free shipping on your order. And 365 days returns, now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/RIP for shipping and 365 day returns. Quince.com/RIP. This message is sponsored by Raycon. If you're still figuring out what to get your dad in your life this Father's Day, I've got you covered. Father's Day has already happened, but you can still get this for him because he's not dead like mine. Raycon's essential open earbuds have been a total game changer for me personally, and honestly, it feels like it was made for dads, whether it's just out for, if it's just out for walks, puttering around the yard, or someone who's never really indoors, these are going to get used. The open ear design is what got me hooked. I can have music or a podcast going and still hear everything around me, which just makes sense. Which just makes being outside so much more enjoyable without feeling checked out. That's a rare gift that actually that's actually practical, something he'll reach for every single day, and is it? And if this has you wanting a pair for yourself too, now honestly is a great time because they're 15% off. Your dad will grab them every day and he'll think of you and he'll remember you and he'll wish that he called you. These earbuds sit outside your ear canal so you can really get the clear sound, but you can actually hear what's happening around you. That awareness is perfect for tackling your fitness goals safely. They're really light in the ear and they're really light and the ear hook rope part rotates so they actually stay in. I've worn them at the gym, on walks, doing stuff around the house. They don't fall out and they don't get uncomfortable. Raycon has over 30 million customers and the sound quality is just as good as the way more expensive brands. And if you don't like them, they have 30-day guarantee. I've been using these pretty much every single day since I got them. Whether I'm at the gym, running errands, or just working out from home, they're the ones I actually reach for over my other earbuds so I can still hear what's going on around me without sacrificing sound quality. Honestly, they've just become a part of my daily routine. I got these. I would like to get them for my mother because she goes outside all the time and it really freaks me out because she has two pit bulls and she can't hear shit around her, and people come up and they say, I have a dog. And then she goes, I can't hear you. And then her dog's attached to their dog's scary. Call to action. Upgrade your dad's everyday routine. Go to buyraycon.com/RIPOPEN to get 15% off. Thanks, Raycon, for sponsoring.
Did you have the feeling like my best friend passed away and there was a feeling when I was like with her body where I was like, where I had this, I also had this with Kenny DeForest, who's a comedian who passed away recently, where you're like looking at them and you know they're not there, but you're kind of like, fuck, get up.
Yeah, come on.
Did you have that feeling where you're like, you're right fucking there, dude, get up?
I don't know if I felt get up, but there was like definitely the feeling of you know, the difference between a body and inhabited and not and inhabited.
You did have that.
Well, yeah, because I saw her, and it was a very compromised situation she was in, and it was devastating, you know, but I felt that she was gone. Like, I definitely felt.
I never had that, and I really wish I did have, every time I've experienced it, I've been like, open your eyes, idiot. Yeah. Like, I haven't had the, like,
oh no,
they're not here.
No, like, the other time, you know, Jews don't do open casket business.
It's fucked.
Nobody it's fucked.
Do it. It's fucked.
You know, but when my best friend in high school died, after high school, like I'd already moved to LA, and he died, and we all went back. It was like in the '80s. The first time I was in LA, like early, Jesus, when was it? Like 86, 87, maybe, and it was the open casket thing,
it's so weird.
It was like again, like. It was, they just look so distorted and weird and fucked up. Like, I had a weird thing happen with my dad and at his dad's funeral. That was weird.
You were with your dad at your grandfather's funeral.
Yeah. But like, even with Dave, like, you know, I knew, well, that was one of the reasons I went to see Lynn, because there is closure in it. Like, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But seeing their dead body, you know, even after you like get up, and you realize like, well, they're not going to get up.
Yeah.
There is closure there. Yeah. You don't walk out of there going like, I don't know why he didn't wake up.
They tried to get me to see my dad's body, and I was like, fuck no. And it took.
How'd he die?
Heart attack.
Oh, just dropped dead.
He was asleep, didn't wake up.
Lucky him.
I know.
How old?
58.
Mm.
Young, but he really didn't
in the family.
Get old. He was really stressed about it. No, he just smoked two packs a day and ate a lot.
Never
of cheese.
Stopped.
He never stopped.
Huh.
Lost so many girlfriends to it. They were like, you have to quit.
To cigarettes?
Yeah, totally.
Huh. And cheese.
So much cheese. Bagel cheese melted in the
microwave. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I just went to the cardiologist.
What'd they say?
It's okay.
That's good.
It's not great. It's okay.
It's like high, but fine?
No, it's like, you know, I'm just going through this, like, this period right now where I'm kind of panicking a little.
Really?
I'm 62. And, you know, I don't feel great.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm 35. I feel like shit.
I know. It just never stops.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think so.
Come
on. What do you want to happen?
Sleep. Good feel. Wake up.
How long do you sleep?
I feel good after 10 hours of sleep.
10?
Yeah. I mean, I got like 6 last night. I feel like
Usually get 6. And it doesn't feel horrible. But lately, I've been forcing myself. Because I'll get up. No matter when I go to bed, I'll get up at like 6:30, 7. And sometimes I'll get up. And then lately, I'm just sort of like, just force yourself to go back to sleep for a couple hours. Force it.
You're 62?
Yeah. Why?
You're fine. You do not seem 62. And you were shredding last night.
Shredding on the guitar.
That was crazy.
Yeah, thanks.
That's nuts. And you're very fit.
I'm doing okay.
My mom's 66, and she's fucking fine.
Fine?
I mean, she's a contractor. She goes out in the field.
How old? 66?
66.
That's good.
Dude. She's dating a 45-year-old woman. She's crushing.
How's that good?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard for her to keep up with the sex stuff. Because
really?
Yeah.
Well, how much can't she just be the one that lays there?
I think she can be the one with the device.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Working it?
But my mom is not my mom is the butch.
Oh, she is?
Yeah.
Top.
Yeah. Mm. What do you think? I have a femme mom? Come on now.
Maybe.
No. I have one femme mom, but she's my mom's ex-wife. But yeah, no, and she's fine. She gives me so much hope.
That's good.
But my dad was like, he was just one of those guys where, you know, it's like they start
laughing
gunning
for
and then
it?
They cough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And,
everyone's
cancel.
Worried when
they
laugh.
And you're like, don't. Yeah. And he also didn't want to get old. He was really scared of it.
It doesn't look great. It doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good.
Both of my parents are still alive. I've been doing that on stage. I say, I'm 62. And both of my parents are still alive. When's that going to fucking end?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
enough
yeah,
already.
Yeah.
You did it. You did it
How
all.
How old are they?
My mom is 86, I think. And my dad's like going to be 88.
How are they doing?
Not great.
Are they in homes or are they?
My dad's still at home and his wife's kind of keeping it up.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, fully in dementia.
Yeah, he has the dementia.
Yeah. And then my mom is like, I don't know, it's day to day with her. She doesn't seem to have dementia, but she's just old. She doesn't remember the day of shit,
yeah.
You know? And it's just difficult. I don't know.
It's hard to see.
But thank God my brother's taking care of her. I don't have to, you know, I see my dad every once in a while. I don't want to deal with it.
No. My mom is a 45-year-old girlfriend, thank God.
I know, but I'm relatively close to them, but I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Is it my responsibility? That's what I wrestle with all the time.
Well,
thank God.
Who's going to take care of you?
Well, I don't got no kids.
Right.
I don't know.
That's probably why you don't have that responsibility thing. Because your brother has kids, right?
He does.
Yeah.
But that's a wild card. You don't know if they're going to step up.
Yeah.
I'm not stepping up.
They'll be like you. Yeah, totally. I know. I think that all the time. My mom is like, you're going to be the one to take care of me. If your sister takes care of me, I'll kill myself. And I'm like, well, it's a win-win for everybody then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going to let her do it.
She also wants to get the euthanasia shit. She's like, anytime I start forgetting shit, I got to.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I know someone's ex-wife, a buddy of mine's ex-wife did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or she got Alzheimer's or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they went to, but I don't know why they went to Switzerland or Sweden. I think you can do it here.
I think you have to bring it from there to here or something.
What?
I thought there was some states. It was like a goodbye party for somebody who was going to take it because she has Alzheimer's.
Right.
I can't.
Where's she live?
That was in Ithaca, where I'm from, but I think she got the drug from somewhere
else. I mean, you can do it on your own. I think there's some, you know.
Why not a bunch of heroin?
Yeah, no, you can do whatever you want, or just a little bit of fentanyl.
why don't people do that?
Be economical,
yeah? Yeah.
You have to look for a bunch of heroin.
I don't condone this behavior.
No.
Yeah.
No, but I think there's some states where you can do it.
I'm terrified about getting old. I mean, that's not true. I've talked to a 25-year-old, and I'm like, God, I do not miss this at all. I do not miss this. And
aren't they different? How old are you?
35.
I mean, I think that 25-year-olds are much different than when I was 25.
Well, yeah, they're really. I mean, that kid that was working there last night, he went to SUNY Purchase, that kid that was running around the venue last night.
Really? Which kid?
The kid who was with the curly hair who was in a band.
Oh, yeah.
Bass or whatever. He was like, I was like, oh, SUNY Purchase, so you did a bunch of drugs, because SUNY Purchase is like a drug school. And he was like, no, my generation doesn't really do that. And I was like, what do they do? Yeah, what do you possibly do but irreversibly expand your brain?
Well, yeah, but how about all these dudes that are like, they'd rather, you know, just hate things rather than fuck?
The incels?
Yeah, but like, yeah. It's broader than that. Like all this weird kind of self-centered behavior that is all about avoiding sex or interaction with women. There's something so fundamentally gay about a lot of it.
Yeah.
But
totally.
But there's also just this idea, like,
you mean the maxing people?
The maxing, but I don't know how many people are really doing that, but yeah. There's that. But there's just this breakdown of interaction that, like, totally. I don't like, and there just seems to be a whole generation of dudes who have no experience or ability to interface with almost anybody, it seems.
Man, have you met the kids that do, though? It's like
a lot of game.
It's like a pack of dogs where they're all so scared, and then one will step up who has like the stick and poke tattoos, and he had maybe like lesbian moms or grew up with sisters, he just crushes puss. Like, he's just like, these Gen Z girls are just like lining up. It's really funny when you see one of those.
That can do it?
Yeah, because he's like, this is endless.
He's a unicorn.
Yeah, totally. And they just fuck for days.
Really?
Well, also, my 35-year-old female friends will date these like 26-year-old boys.
Really?
Because these 35-year-olds are so horny. Men our age are children. I mean, men our age are like mentally retarded. Like, they can't get their life together, right?
Yeah, but what's a 25-year-old?
25-year-old comes a lot.
Yes.
So they meet up with these 25-year-olds and they go, I don't mind that you play video games because you're 25.
Yeah.
And you're going to fuck the shit out of me all day.
And they
because
do.
Nobody in your generation does. That's like something that some of my friends are doing.
Really?
I can't do that. I hate
it. But does it work out? I mean, like, they
no,
can.
No, certainly not.
But can they, like, how long does the fucking really go on for? I mean, you're talking once or twice kind
of
thing?
I think it's like a few.
Really?
Yeah. But no, I don't
so
think.
So don't they have to kind of train these guys
a
little bit?
Yes. Totally. Totally. But they're eager, which doesn't happen at our, you know what I mean? Now that I'm 35 and fucking like 40-year-olds or whatever.
Yeah.
They're getting tired. Uh-huh. And you're 35 and you're like, come on.
Yeah.
So they're just going down. I can't do that because I can't talk to people in their 20s.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like when I was like younger, I always liked the older, like I did date like some older women, but it was never that, you know, successful. It was never that great.
Yeah.
But I felt like I learned things.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. They're dating older women. But I don't know about this whole generation that people are talking about where there's like, are they going Republican, the little kids?
I don't know. I have no idea what's happening.
Somebody said that there's like all these little new baby Republicans.
I think there's a lot of new baby Nazis.
Yeah. But what is that? Is that the Manosphere? Is that the Rogan?
I think it's Nick Fuentes.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's that guy. The sort of don't fuck, hate Jews. I think that's the T-shirt.
I just haven't met those kids. Yeah. The kids I meet are the ones who like still have a stuffed animal attached to their bag and they're like really shy.
Oh, you meet them?
That's
I just felt like when I was that age, I was so much more curious. There was not everything was available all the time without context. I mean, so if I was like 25, 63, 73, 83, 88, 87, like I'm graduating college. But like we were close enough still to like the 70s and the 60s to where, you know, things were sort of still interesting. There was no internet. Yeah. There was no fucking cell phone. Yeah. And like you had to go out and find stuff at music stores. You had to go see bands. You had to do all this stuff. Well, I don't know about the library, but like there was still, you felt like there was a world out there that was kind of interesting and accessible. And I don't know if that curiosity even exists anymore because everything's online and nothing is like, you know, out in the world.
Yeah.
I don't know how the phones are breaking people's brains. I can't even imagine it.
I mean, they're breaking my brain for sure.
They are, right?
Well, they do what you're saying, where they reduce the hunger.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're like, I need to satiate. I'm a mammal. Yeah. I'm an animal. I need to satiate. Yeah. And they just satiate.
Yes.
And
for
God,
hours.
That bit you had last night about the 11 hours thing is so fucking good.
Oh, thanks.
Because everybody's thought of the...
Oh, what's the joke?
Yeah, what's the joke where you're like, this is unreal.
You don't
but
set
what
aside
you said
the time.
Where you're like, I wake up, I have coffee, and then I'm like, I need to set aside. It's so
11.
Good. Yeah. Also, setting aside 11 hours is so funny.
Thank you.
I love that bit. But yeah, it was, but I think for me, it's taken away the hunger. This, you know, it also does something.
It fucks with your brain, man. It's that full spectrum dopamine rush. You get all the feels. Oh, yeah.
In the morning, you wake up and you blast it, so you don't have to seek out sensation.
I don't know, like, or a person? Do you have a person there? You have a person there sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. When yeah.
I haven't had a person in my bed in a long time.
Really?
Or that I've woken up with. No, long time. Why is that?
I don't know.
I've been pretty comfortable alone. Even when I was dating my last girlfriend, she had her own place. We didn't sleep together much. She snored.
She snored.
It's hard. Snoring is hard.
Impossible. I can't do it. It's hard. I just got out of a different relationship because he snored. Not because he was.
But it's part of it, right?
It was. I was getting resentment where I was like, just shut the fuck up. You know what I mean?
There's nothing you can do, especially if it wakes you up. What are you supposed to? How much are you supposed to deal with? Is it worth it?
I had to roll over on the side a lot. No, I don't think it's worth it.
Or you hit him. You literally, and it'll stop for like an hour.
It makes you hate them, honestly. Totally. It's crazy. And you wake up the next day and you're like, my whole day is going to be different because of ridiculous no shape.
Because, yeah. And I'm like so codependent that there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
But totally. Like put up with it? Why am I putting up with it? I had a second bedroom. If she'd stay over, I'd just put her over there.
That's nice.
It's okay. I think that's the way it should be.
That's so nice. Like have if you're, sex, cuddle, then yeah, and get
go.
The fuck.
Yeah, go.
God, I would kill for that.
Cross the hall. Nice. See you later. Tomorrow.
And how long have you been not
out of the relationship?
Yeah.
I don't know how long it's been. A few months?
That's nothing. You've been single a few months?
Single a few months, yeah.
That's fine.
No, I'm fine, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a 5-year thing. Went on a bit long, but it was okay. You know, like, sometimes you don't understand why you're together with people totally.
Was it tumultuous in like a passionate way, or was it boring in a flaccid way?
It was, you know, it's the first relationship I was in after Lynn died. You know, I met her like about 5 or 6 months after, during COVID.
Yeah.
So we kind of came together in this darkness. And she had her own sort of issues. But it was like, you know, but we were there for each other during COVID. It was low pressure and it just kind of kept going on, you know. I think a lot of it was, it wasn't very dramatic and it was okay. You know, she was pretty autonomous. She liked her own space. I was too. And it just kind of worked for a while. But then, like, I think she started to resent me and you know, things got a little tricky. And I think she wanted to be in a relationship that had a future, like marriage and that kind of stuff. And I was always pretty clear that I can't do that again. And
wait, who'd you marry?
I didn't marry anybody.
Oh, okay.
I've been married twice.
You've been married twice?
Yeah.
When you were way younger?
I guess.
How old were you when you first got married?
Maybe 32, 33,
no. The first again? Time.
Yeah, I was with her total probably seven and a half years. Married three and a half, first wife.
Okay.
And then I met somebody who got me sober and I was in love with her. And so I left the first wife.
Okay.
And went to that one.
Yeah.
And then married her. But we were together a total like 7 or 8 years again. Moved to LA together 2002, got married 2004. She left me 2007 or so.
Oh, she's the one that got away feeling?
Yeah, it was good for her. It's good for her to get
away. Were you an asshole?
Yeah.
Because you were on the rise?
No, I definitely wasn't on the rise, but I was newly sober.
Oh, you were righteous?
No, not righteous. Just like when you get sober, like it wasn't, no, I wasn't righteous because she was sober too. Mm. Like she got me sober. And got me in recovery and stuff. But like, you don't have any control of your emotions. You don't know who you are. You're like a lunatic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you were a real drug addict or really, you know, doing it for your life.
Were you manic?
Manic, insecure, angry, you know, paranoid, you know, jealous. Like, there's a saying in sobriety that it's like, don't commit suicide before you're 5 years sober, because you'd be killing the wrong person.
Oh, shit.
Interesting,
that's
right?
That's so good. Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess when I got off everything, I had my love. I had gotten into the cellar, and I was so head over heels in love with stand-up that I think it might have...
Buffered?
It buffered it, and it also was like, I'm safe because I have this. Yeah. But if I had been... Like, for example, the pandemic, I'm trying to be sober,
And I lost my mind on the guy that I was dating because I was like, I don't know who I am. I don't know if you love me. I think you're cheating on me, but I also don't think I want to be with you.
That.
But yeah, totally. Because I don't have stand up to be my
that
wife.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You totally. Know, so like, yeah, I was, you know, emotionally abusive and crazy. And I think, you know, and she was in comedy too at that time. But like, she just finally, I think, was like, she saw an out and took it.
And you probably made her your higher power a little bit because she got you sure. sober. Yeah.
There was a bit of that. But we were really, you know, she definitely got me, like it landed over, it took a bit, but she got me to understand how to stay sober.
Yeah.
And I still, like, I still give her props for that. But I don't think I really, you know, I've tried to make an amends to her, but I don't think I really realized, you know, I didn't, the nature of codependency and the nature of just how crazy I was and emotionally difficult and abusive. And in retrospect now, like, you know, I'm happy that she got out. It got ugly though with really? The divorce and everything. Yeah. And we didn't even have kids.
Fully married. Did you want to have kids with her?
No, I didn't want to have kids. Never wanted to have kids with either of them. I think the first one, I think they both wanted to have kids. They both ended up with kids.
Oh.
But I don't regret not having kids.
Really? That's what Louis Black said.
And I used to do that on stage that I don't have kids. What is it? I've been married twice. I don't have kids. It takes a special kind of asshole to be married twice and have no children.
Yeah.
And I said, I think my second wife put it like this. You think I'm bringing children into this?
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. That's, I have a bit right now where I'm like, everybody asks, now that I'm 35, do you want to have kids? And I'm like, I just decided not to kill myself. You know what I mean? I'm on day two of keeping going. Like, let's relax. I just got to the age where I'm like, I guess I'll pay taxes. Keep myself alive.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't regret not having kids at all. I'm too anxious. I have too much anxiety and I'm too selfish. And, you know, like, I don't know really how much anger I still have because I've, you know, built my life or engaged in relationships that don't trigger it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, I can't say, like, I've evolved. I'm just, like, not putting myself in a position.
Yeah. You have no idea what the kid would trigger.
I just, in general, like, because I used to be a pretty angry fuck. And I don't, you know, I think you get older and wiser.
Yeah.
But I also haven't put myself in a situation that would provoke it.
Do you get angry? Did you ever get, like, because I have, like, all these rage issues. Did it primarily come up in partnerships or did it come up, like, professionally and, like, or, like mine is with strangers and whoever I'm fucking. That's who I fight.
That's everybody, right?
No, I'm not. None of my friends.
Not friends. Okay,
love my
got
friends.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Not fighting with my family. Attacking strangers.
I don't know. Like, I got mad at things, but I definitely, it was pretty volatile in relationship.
Yeah.
Like, some real fighting, you know, and raging. And it's scary. Rage is scary because you do, the thing when you have that kind of anger, wherever it comes from, is that there's, you know, you will hit a moment with it where you're like, all right, this is dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, I've got to fucking pull out of this or pull back. You know, get out or figure this out.
Mine feels like
I scare yourself.
Yes. I realized this the other day, or this was like a couple weeks ago. This was in between the on and off thing. I dated somebody else. And he did something that pissed me off. And I just like, I felt this like cord in me.
Yeah.
And then I just felt this hand just be like, fuck it. And I just was like, you fucking did it. And I like, and how good... Like the high that I got and how honest I felt and how like almost like my chakras were aligned
in
letting the rage go.
Yeah.
That afterwards he was like, you can't ever do that. He was being calm while I was raging, right? He was being totally calm. So I just let it rip and it felt so good. And he goes, you can't ever do that again. And I just started sobbing because I was like, man, for a second, I almost thought that you were going to be like, ah, who cares? That you just did that.
Yeah.
And let me do that.
That's the fucked up thing when you have rage is that, you know, when you're in it, you can't, you don't know how it's landing on other people. And it's horrible.
It's horrible.
And it is life changing for them.
Yeah.
And it is totally traumatic and fucked up. And you can do it one time.
Yeah.
And it never be forgotten.
Yeah.
And it's fucked
up.
But
for us, it doesn't feel like that.
No, because when it's out of you, you're like, hey, what's up?
Yeah, totally.
And they're like, what do you mean, what's up?
So then the way that we have the outlet for that is music, stand-up. There's just you have to find so many ways to release that thing. Or do you feel like you have to be like, keep it
away? Well, I think you might want to try to figure out why, where it's coming from.
Yeah, but it doesn't change the fact that it comes from a childhood full of anger, right? Where that's how we communicate.
Sure, but like, okay, but deeper than that. It's got to be deeper than that. Like, I mean, you talked about it a bit on your special. I mean, you know, you're talking about a lot of pain and a lot of responsibility and a lot of sadness and, you know, abandonment stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, because beneath all the anger is like some sort of sadness and fear. So, like, I guess processing that stuff or owning it in a different way might diminish some of the just blind rage of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, owning the pre-anger, which is pain and abandonment.
Yeah, like identifying fully where it comes from will make it, because I guess I've had this fear that like no matter how much I do therapy, how much I identify it, that the high that I get from releasing it is always going to be there. But I think you might be right that like the more that you identify it, the high.
I think the trick about therapy and I don't do it usually, is that like if you're smart, you can identify most of it.
Yeah.
You know, but can you, you know, put yourself back there enough to have the appropriate feelings around it as sort of an exorcism? Do you like, can you go back and feel the sadness?
Have you done that?
A bit. I mean, you can do it with EMDR.
I know, I love EMDR, but I've only done it a couple times.
I think that if you have trauma that is specific, like events, that EMDR is very good. And I think the process of EMDR, the sort of like, where are you now? What degree are you feeling this?
Yeah.
You know, where did that take you? Like this checking in. That I think that is works, does what it's supposed to in integrating, you know, trauma into the bigger sea of your consciousness so it's not triggered, I think is interesting. But I mean, like, I don't want to feel the rage. I don't want to have that experience.
Yeah.
Like, I got a little mad at someone the other day, and the thing that was scary about it is that when that stuff comes up, it's not unlike grief, and it's probably similar. It's like you don't have a lot of control over it.
Yeah.
Once it starts coming.
Yeah.
And that's fucked up. It, you know, that like, if once the bull is out of the chute.
Yeah.
It's fucking, all bets are off. And like that, right when the tone changes, where you feel like almost your body composition, where it's like, oh, fuck, you know, like.
But isn't that a good feeling?
It's uncontrollable, right?
I know, but I think I'm addicted to that.
How often are you doing this?
Like last night, this guy was shining his brights at my car 1,000 times, and I just rolled down my window and hung my whole self out of the car, and I was like, quit fucking, what? You know. And
okay, well, that's, the assumption there is like, you're just throwing it out there into the universe.
Yeah.
It's a stranger. It's road rage.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's isolated. So it's not someone you love. But that doesn't mean you won't catch a bullet or get punched in the fucking face.
About. Yeah, totally. But I would like that moment where I'm seeing the flashers. I would like to just be able to be like, I don't know. It's like maybe it's that I don't want to let go of that side of myself. I don't want to let go of the fact that I am the person who gets out of the car and is like, what the fuck, man? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm worried of what I'll become if I don't do that.
What do you mean? Like, I know that feeling, but it's like, what do you think you're going to become? Like, you're never going to become a, you know, a nun. You know, you're never, it's not like you're ever going to be like, I don't know, it's just all gone.
I don't know, isn't like Henry Rollins like very like.
That guy's like a compressed mass.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, whatever he is, you're not looking at him thinking like, he solved
it. Yeah, you're right. That's 100% true, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you can.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Hi, Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it really comes down to the choice, you know, of hurting yourself or others, right? Not causing, you know, not creating emotional violence.
Yeah.
Right? But like I said, I've been isolated. I've been in a relationship that wasn't very, you know, dramatic at all. And that was part of the great thing about it.
Yeah.
And in terms of that, so like I quit the nicotine, you know, recently. And I was taking a mild medication for anxiety. But I'm trying to figure out, you know, like I've been having these other weird symptoms. So I'm trying to like cut everything out.
You've been having the tingly hand thing?
Yeah.
I hate that.
Dude, I get hands and feet, dude. Going.
I hate it.
You got
from
it?
The medication?
No. I don't know. I got off the medication. Still have it.
You have Raynaud's?
I don't know. What's that?
Well, that's where the blood doesn't get to your hand. I have that. Where the
you
blood,
have it?
Yeah. It's like if you don't eat or you get too cold, it just is tingling.
I don't know what the fuck it is, but it's driving me nuts.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think it might be a hormonal thing.
Oh, really?
A dude hormone thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. But in that process, I got off the nicotine, and I'm on and off nicotine my whole fucking life.
Yeah, same.
And, you know, I was on the Zins. I was going to sleep with Zins. I was on stage. I had three fucking Zins in my mouth. I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
But I've been through it all before. Been a long time since I've been off it. So now I'm off it, like, this is week 7. And, like, I'm edgy, dude.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I can feel, like, you know, that sort of, like, dude, fuck that guy. Like, yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, that's there.
Yeah.
You know, but the
road. That's no sex, no nicotine. I mean, that's like you're quitting two things at once.
Well, I'm having sex.
Oh, you're having sex. Okay,
yeah,
good.
I'm okay.
Okay.
I'm doing the best I can.
Okay, good. Okay, good. You said it's been a long time somebody was in your bed.
Sleeping over.
Oh, you're just fucking and they're going?
Sure.
That's awesome. How does that happen? They just
It's not like I'm throwing them out. I mean, like we have sex and we hang out, maybe have some tea.
He's nice.
Yeah. Like, okay, well, be careful driving home. Let me know you got home, okay.
Be careful on all that tea.
Yeah.
That tea will fuck you up.
It's crazy, man. I know it's non-caffeinated, but mint teas.
Wow.
Some ancient shit, dude.
And they come over, do you have sex, and then they leave. Okay, so, all right, so you're okay.
I'm okay.
You're not going full no sex, no nicotine. I could never do that. That's crazy.
No.
And then, but you're on edge. You're getting irate.
Yeah, a little bit.
Are you touring all the time?
What time is it? I'm starting to. I got to put, you know, I've got like, you know, I'm going to do another hour. I don't think I can announce it yet, but so it's a pretty quick turnaround for me. I mean, the other one just came out last year. That took me a couple years, but I seem to have like another hour of stuff that's happening.
That's awesome.
So I got to get that together.
Was that new last night?
Yeah, that's all pretty new. Yeah, that's all new. Yeah,
yeah.
It wasn't on the last special.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I got a bunch of shit. I don't know where it comes from because every time I do a special, I'm like, that might be it. But then you have what's left over, and then you start with I don't know. It just keeps happening.
Mm-hmm. You have the like the 8 minutes that remain from the previous 20. Hour. Yeah. And then that.
I'm usually when I'm about to shoot an hour, I've usually got an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And I try to get 73.
I've only shot that one special, and I was like, that whatever remained, I was like, I never want to do that again. So I really started from.
It's kind of weird, isn't it? Like, there's so much shit that I did, and that if you have that brain where it's sort of like, well, it's on television now, I'm done.
Yeah.
It's so dumb in some ways.
It is dumb, but I also have the residue that didn't make it onto television. I'm like, you're done too, because you were packaged with other.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's true. There's
it's
one
like when you go on stage and your old joke does well.
Yeah.
And you get off stage and you're pissed about it.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's my joke.
Yeah.
Why am I upset that did well?
Yeah, because like you barely cared.
Yeah. Totally.
You're just gonna. I don't because of the way I do comedy, like if I somehow or another come up with like a relatively tight joke, I get bored of them very quickly.
Oh yeah, totally.
You know, like, cause like I like to talk and I like things to be come together and flow. But if something just works as like a, almost a one liner,
yeah.
I'm
it
like-
It becomes hack in our head immediately.
Totally. You're like, I know
what?
That works.
I made that.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Okay,
what?
I'm gonna let you out of here.
Do we do the whole thing?
I think so.
So wait, how many podcasts are you doing? What happened to the one with, what's his name?
Who? Ian?
Yeah.
I'm about to go do that.
Oh, okay.
I have RIP because I would do on Be and Ian, which is a fart podcast. You're welcome to come do it right now.
A what?
It's like a fart poopy laughy
fart,
one.
A fart podcast?
Yeah, it's like a fart fun.
That's with Ian?
Yeah, it's like silly goose, punks.
I don't think he ever talked to me until a few weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
I'd somehow decided that you guys were like anti-Marin, but you're not.
What?
I know.
No way. You know what's funny?
This is the way my brain works.
Is you're doing the podcast and then tomorrow I leave for Austin.
Right? Oh, yeah?
Because I contain multitudes. Yeah, I don't want to do it. I really don't like it there.
Oh, were you going to go do the club? I know all these people for all my lives. You know, like most of the issues just came for one specific reason. You know, it was political in nature. And I can't really let it go.
Yeah.
But, you know, like that needless to say, like I've known them. I know them all. It's like summer camp.
If you see them, it's hello.
Well, I think out of all of them, I only think the one that has, you know, well, I guess that's, I think that probably, I don't know what Tony's doing or like how they've shit talked to me. You know, I know how Joe did. Yeah, but these things, you know, generally change when you see somebody.
Yeah.
And you kind of be like, so what's going to happen now?
Yeah, totally.
And then, you know, it's back to like, eh, how's it going?
Yeah.
Who knows? I'm sort of over a lot of that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm not going to go. I did Austin, but I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a laser tag place, but I'm going to do
it. Is that what it feels like in
it
there?
It feels so much like a laser tag place.
Really?
My issue with that club is, listen, the audience is incredible. The room is set up great. And there is a man who walks you upstairs who is a Navy SEAL, basically, like surrounded in guys with like fucking AKs and shit on them.
Yeah.
And you get to the green room and they're like, anything you need? And you're like, I would like some water.
Yeah.
And maybe my rider. And they're like, yeah, anything but that. We have mushrooms and dust that you can use for alpha brain. And I'm like, I just, what is going on here? So it's really when you go there, it is like, you're like, buckle up. And you have to go on that strip that's really fucked up with all the homeless people.
Yeah.
And you go in and then there's 12-year-olds running the place and you're like, and there's people coming into the green room that you've never met who are high and you know, and you're just like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
And you just get through it and you get on stage and then it's great.
Yeah.
But everything around.
But you're like touring a ton. So you like, are you blowing up?
I don't know. I don't know.
But are you selling tickets?
Yeah. So I sold out. Yeah. I sold out Dallas and the Mothership.
Where are you playing in Dallas?
I have no idea. Little theater.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm doing theaters now. But yeah, I think it's
great. Going,
there's still some places I don't sell out.
Well, that's normal.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, have fun.
Thanks.
All right.
Do you want to plug anything?
Yeah, you can go to WTFpod.com/tour for wherever I'm going to be near you.
Because you're going on tour.
Yeah, I'll be around. Yeah, I'm doing a lot of dates.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are 2/4 of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.